Welcome to the Deep Bass Podcast, where we take a hard look at the element that makes or breaks games, the music. I'm Peter Thomas, and I'm joined by my co-host Cody Haltom, and we are happy to have you along with us on our journey through Super Mario Brothers 3. Hi, Cody. How's it going?
Hey, Peter. What's up?
Not much, man. I was looking forward to this episode. I really enjoy Super Mario Brothers 3. And that's saying a lot, because I'm actually not much of a Super Mario Brothers guy.
I don't like this game.
No?
No, I appreciate it for what it is and everything that does for Mario, but this is a game that I just couldn't get into back as a kid. I have a good reason, and we'll get to it in my history, don't worry. But no, this is not one of my favorite Mario games, actually.
Interesting. I think I'm the opposite. Like I said, I'm not a huge Mario guy in general. I typically lean towards more like the Zeldas, the Metroids, that kind of thing. But I have very fond memories of Super Mario Brothers 3. It's a charming game. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, no, I completely understand why. It's one of those games where I'm like, oh, I get it. You know, like, I appreciate the game so much. Between everything it added, Mario wouldn't be where it is today if it wasn't for this game. And I know that. But just in its delivery into my life and that kind of thing, I would rather play other things. Not that it's a bad game, because it's not at all. It's a great game. I would just be interested in something else.
Well, let's jump right in here. I'm going to go ahead into the game history that we have. Super Mario Brothers 3 is a platform video game developed and published by Nintendo for the Nintendo Entertainment System. It was released for home consoles in Japan on October 23rd, 1988, in North America on February 12th, 1990, and in Europe on August 29th of 1991. Prior to its release on the NES, it was initially released in North America on July 15th, 1989 via the PlayChoice 10 arcade machines, which I had never heard of prior to digging up this information. It was developed by Nintendo Entertainment Analysis and Development, led by Shigeru Miyamoto and Takashi Tezuka. Maybe that's as best as I've got for the Japanese names. Super Mario Brothers 3 was praised by critics and is listed as one of the greatest video games of all time. It is the third best selling NES game, with more than 17 million copies sold worldwide. And I did do some digging. It probably comes as no surprise, but first and second best games were the Super Mario Brothers original game and Duck Hunt, respectively, which were both pack-ins for the NES when they came out. So the two were actually combined into one cart. Super Mario Brothers 3 sold 17 million. Super Mario Brothers 1 sold over 40 million copies, and Duck Hunt sold 28 million. So there was a large gap even between 1 and 2, let alone 2 and 3. That's pretty impressive. The game also inspired a short-lived animated television series called The Adventures of Super Mario Brothers 3. It was remade for the Super NES as a part of the Super Mario All-Stars in 1993 and Game Boy Advance as Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3, which were some of the most confusing names in Game Boy Advance history, I think. That game came out in 2003. The game has been re-released on the Virtual Console, both on the Wii U and the 3DS systems. It is also pre-installed on the NES Classic Mini. On September 19, 2018, the game was re-released yet again on the Nintendo Switch Online service with added netplay. So that actually allows you to play multiplayer over your Nintendo Online account, which was actually pretty fun. Mm. This game introduces many new mechanics, including power-up suits for Mario to wear, somersaults during his star power, and the Koopa Kids introductions themselves, as well as a power-up inventory system, among many other things. A lot to take in there. Obviously, this game is beloved for all of the unique features and things that it came with. But one of the things that really kind of, I think, sparked it was just how different this was from even the first and second Mario Brothers. Now, I know it's hard to kind of loop in the second Mario Brothers, but this was kind of like the evolution of Mario. And like you were saying, Cody, this kind of really sets the tone for a lot of Mario's going forward, specifically around like the power-up suits and everything like that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, think about like, God, what was the name of it? It was the one for Wii U, I think it was, where you had like the cat suit, where you were climbing up, you know, mountainsides and trees like a cat. We wouldn't have those game mechanics if it wasn't for this game. You know, some of the things I didn't realize were like even the differences when you had the star power, you know, the somersault and that kind of thing. And I was thinking back, I was like, oh, wait, that wasn't in the first one, was it? And I mean, I'm writing off the second one because of that whole debacle that it is. But yeah, this really changed the game for Mario.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely revolutionary, and they really pushed the system. If you remember, I mean, the Super Mario Brothers 1 and Super Mario Brothers 3 came out on the exact same system, but somehow Super Mario Brothers 3 ended up being just so much more colorful and vibrant compared to the first one. I feel like they used all of like 8 colors in the first game, and in Super Mario Brothers 3, it's just, I mean, it's beautiful. Everything stands out. The world is kind of fleshed out a lot more. There's a lot more texture and everything that just makes it feel a lot more alive.
To me, that's something that I think we still see. Something that I notice a lot is at the beginning and end of a console generation, which is what we are in right now. Like if you were to take a PlayStation 4 game at launch and look it up against, you know, like Ghost of Tsushima, like those two will look drastically different just because the developers know how to harness all the raw power out of the machine, and they're able to do so many more things. So I can understand, you know, back in the day that being something that's like mind blowing, but I do think it's actually incredibly more common than we give it credit for.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right as far as that goes. But what's bizarre about this is that this wasn't end of console. This was right in its prime. The NES came out in what, 1985, and they continued producing NES cartridges well into the life of the SNES, which came out in 1990, I believe. So this was right in the middle between those two, right around that 87-88 time period. So while I definitely agree that, you know, later games definitely look better as you understand and know how to use the processing power and all of the resources that the console gives, This was just vast improvements by, you know, Nintendo's in-house team. And maybe that's what speaks volume, is that, you know, these guys worked in-house. These were first party developers, so they worked with the console nonstop. So maybe that could speak a little bit to it. Tell me a little bit about your history with this game. When did you start playing it? What's it mean to you? That kind of thing.
I know I have, and I put it down here that I've never played this on the NES. When I say that, I mean, I'm sure I popped it in and played it every once in a while at a friend's house or something. But my first experience with this was because it came bundled with my Super Nintendo as a kid. So I got my Super Nintendo, and it came bundled with Super Mario World and Super Mario All-Stars. When you get Mario 3 versus Mario World, you wouldn't have one without the other. But as a young kid, I wanted to play Mario World. I didn't want to play these older games that weren't as good or as polished, where the graphics weren't as great. I wanted the big new shiny toy. You know, who really wouldn't? This is a game that I never beat. I don't have a lot of strong memories with it, like I do with Mario World. And again, just going during this time frame, whenever I got this thing. But I do have one particularly strong memory, is my parents and I were vacationing in the Outer Banks for a family reunion. And so all of my family was around and that kind of thing. And I remember playing this on that trip. I remember it like it was yesterday. I know exactly where the TV was, near the door, the cabinet. I can picture it all. That is the only real memory I have associated with this game. But other than that, this game just didn't really hit for me. But at least I know the reasoning why.
It's interesting that you said that you would gravitate more towards Super Mario World, which, by the way, my wife would absolutely agree with you. She is a big fan of Super Mario World and is anxiously awaiting the day that we cover that. But Super Mario Brothers 3, when it was included in Super Mario Brothers All-Star, actually got a graphical upgrade. So it didn't look as old as it should have, I guess. So interesting that you would still lean more towards it. I mean, I guess the features were present in Super Mario World that weren't there in Super Mario Brothers 3, but kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, give me a Star Road, that kind of thing. And I was all about it. And you're right, it did get like a polished upgrade. As I was doing my notes for this, there was one person streaming this game on Twitch. So I booted that up and I actually watched them play it. And I'm looking at, you know, some of the videos I have going on YouTube, and I'm like, this is a different looking game. The graphics, I don't think necessarily got too much of a bump, but I noticed that the colors severely did. They really put like a lot of more color into like the menu items and that kind of thing that were in your inventory and also in the game itself. But I didn't really view it as much of a graphical thing.
Yeah, I think most of what I saw was mostly in the character sprites. But something to note about this game was how many creatures they used. And I'd have to actually look and see the history behind it and which ones came first. But there were actually creatures that they used eventually in other games. Like, I'm pretty sure there's something in there from Zelda that was used. I think Birdo comes back in different things like that. It's the kings when they're turned into little critters. I remember we just actually played this not too long ago, and I was like, oh, look, they use these creatures, and these are in other games too. So I'd be curious to know, did they pull it from Super Mario Brothers 3 to these other games, or did they grab them from the other games and put them into Super Mario Brothers 3 as kind of like a nod to their other franchises?
I would think that would be either way they did it. I'm glad that they did it. And they still do that kind of stuff to this day, which I absolutely love to see. But why don't you tell me about your history?
Super Mario Brothers 3 is one of the older memories of gaming that I have that I shouldn't have. So I have memories of games when I was like 1 and 2. And the reason I know I was that age was because these were times when I lived in Texas, which is where I was actually born, and then Florida, when my mom lived with my grandmother and some of her sisters and stuff like that. So anytime I bring up memories of times like that, she's just like blown away at the fact that I can remember the stuff. And I honestly don't know why I do. But Super Mario Brothers 3 is one of those games that I do remember playing a lot with my cousins. So I never owned my own NES for quite a while, actually. I think I was much older before I actually got one of my own. So most of my gameplay for the NES was done, you know, anytime I was with family. And we would stay up pretty late playing Super Mario Brothers 3, just trying to see how far we can get. And I remember as a kid being absolutely petrified of the Angry Sun in World, I think it's 2-2. Comes to find out later as I got older that you can just literally kill it. Get a turtle shell and you can kill it. And then the rest of the stage is stress-free and Angry Sun-free. Would have been cool if there was like a feature where the whole place like frosts over without the sun, but you know, probably a little too advanced for that gaming period.
You're asking for a lot here.
Yeah, right. But I do have a strong fondness for this game. I don't know if it's my favorite Mario of all time, but it's definitely in the top three. For nothing else, the uniqueness of it, and of course the music. This soundtrack is just absolutely wonderful. There's so many songs on here that I could have put on my list as we went through. And I found myself with like this long list that I had to like pare down because I'm like, oh, we only cover 5, but man, I hate pulling some of these songs off of here. Did you feel the same way?
No, actually, like after I did my first pass, I probably had 10 tracks left. Like, and that's a lot. Or that's not a lot. Typically, I have like 20 or so. And I'm hoping it's not the composer because it's Koji Kondo again, right?
It is. Yep.
Okay. So I'm hoping it's not him. I know I'm going to hear his name and hear his work again. But again, I think it is limited by the technology at the time with a lot of kind of the stuff, kind of like I was saying about the Zelda episode that we did. I think that is where most of my problems with it, like I have one like land theme on my entire list. And even that one, I admit, is not good, but it's there for a reason, which we'll get to. But no, I didn't really enjoy this as much as you did, I don't think.
I guess let's jump into it because I'm curious to hear a little bit about the tracks you did put on your list and find out kind of what didn't strike for you. Why don't you start us off with your number 5?
My number 5 is just what I was talking about. It is Iceland theme. this is on my list for personal reasons. In my memories, I listed playing this game in the Outer Banks. When I was there, this was the world I was stuck on. I tortured my family with this track for like a solid week because I would just let it run on the TV and not play the game. Oddly, this is a weird pull. I remember getting like a magic kit and quote unquote performing magic for my family. And this was my quote unquote stage music that I used in the background, partially because I was stuck on the world and partially because it does sound mysterious. I don't know how these composers do it, but this track lets you know that you're in a cold environment. I could honestly copy and paste my notes from Ice Cave Chant because that would honestly sum it up. This isn't a great track by itself, and I know that, but my personal memories of being with my family makes it hold a special place in my heart, and that's why it's my number 5.
Really nailed kind of what I was going to say about this track. So this is the World 6 overworld theme, yes, which is all covered in snow and ice and everything like that. I was laughing because as I was listening to it, I'm like, man, this song is chilling. And I was like, oh, wait, no pun intended. But it does. It's kind of got a crystalline type of feel to it, like you are in ice caves or something of the sort. I do enjoy how well this song matches the overall theme of the world, but it is a little too simplistic for me to enjoy much more than that. My appreciation of it is purely on what it does for the world and how it complements it. But beyond that, it doesn't really do much for me. And I feel like there were definitely better world picks than this one. I understand, at least as far as your personal memories go, why this would end up on a list.
Yeah, and like I said, honestly, I don't necessarily even care for the track because I did put the word tortured in there for a reason. But this is just part of my experience with this game that it would honestly end up on my list just because of that alone. All right, bud, what do you have for number 5?
My number 5 is the Underground theme song. This is a pretty common staple in the Super Mario World or Super Mario Brothers franchise, where they have a different song for different particular areas, but there's always an underground theme that they have for any time you go down into the pipes and you're in a separate area that's usually like cave-like or something of that nature. But when I wrote out my list, I felt like I had to start off strong. Hearing this version of the underground theme always gets me pretty hype because this is one of the earliest songs that I practice beatboxing to. Not very good at it, but I can beatbox at least a little bit. I do remember hearing the song and loving that it was the same underground theme that they used in the original Super Mario Brothers, but it's got kind of like this hip hop feel to it, which, as I've spoken about before, it's kind of my forte. I really enjoy hip hop and R&B and that kind of music. So hearing the drums come in and give it more of like hip hop vibe was really fascinating to me.
Peter, my only complaint about this track is that it's not higher up, because this is my number 3. This is a classic track. This is more spaced out / slowed down than the original version of the underworld theme from Super Mario Brothers. Unlike some of the crappy drums on some of the other tracks, the way they're used here actually drive this track and make it as good as it is. It's dark, but not as dark as like a castle theme or an airship theme. It just has a certain jive to it. It's an awesome, slightly improved take on an already iconic track.
Your response is, I think, something that I was expecting simply because of some of the other tracks that you have on your list, knowing that this one is number three for you and knowing that there's something else on here that has a nostalgic feel to it. I kind of expected that kind of response back, but it's not that I didn't want it higher, because you're right, it is a very great iconic track. But one of the things for me is that I do look for the originality of the newer tracks. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later when we get to some of your other songs. But yeah, it's just something for me that I, like I said, I enjoyed it. I loved the way that it sounded. I love the, even the hip hop kind of vibe that it gives off, but overall it's on the list. It's just not that high.
Yeah. Your entire list. There's only one thing on your list where I'm like, really? But the rest of it, you know, we were talking earlier about how I cut my list down. Whenever I pulled up the doc to import everything in, I was like, oh crap. Most of the tracks made it, because everything that's on your list almost made the cut except for one.
Sure. Well, why don't we go ahead and jump into your number four?
My number four is the Koopa Kid battle theme. This is clearly a boss fight. I dig the clarinet, which really drives this track home for me, which is odd because it's almost an undertone to the whole track. It's energetic, light, and ominous all at the same time, which is really hard to describe. This brings back being stuck in those confined rooms, trying to bonk a Koopa Kid on the head three times, while their bodies flung around the room with absolutely no aim trying to kill me.
Saw this because at first when I looked at it, I'm like, is this just the boss theme? But I realized that you were going with like the subcastle boss themes. It was very hard for me not to put this on my list. I really enjoy both of them a lot. I didn't end up putting them on my list because while they're good, they don't do anything outstanding for me per se, but this one was very close, particularly because you encounter this song once or twice per world. Depends on how many little subcastles that there are, or fortresses, I think is what they call them, maybe. So you hear this almost as frequently as you would hear, you know, any of the other overworld themes. I agree, it is incredibly catchy, fun, and exhilarating. I don't know what it is, man, but when that start comes on, that that just gets me ramped up, ready to go. Even though those guys are so simple to beat with all of their weird evolutions that they start getting, like the wings and crap like that. I don't know. I hear that song and I'm fired up and ready to go.
Yeah, I can totally get that. And what is it with Nintendo and its rules of three? It's always three times bonking somebody on the head. They do change that eventually in some of the later games. But I always found it really funny because all you would have to do really is stand like up against the side of the wall and just jump whenever he got close and you were good. I don't know why some of these were as easy as they were.
Beats me, man. I got to the point where, especially after I started watching speedruns and stuff like that, where I don't even wait anymore. It's like the minute they're hopping up in the air, you can hit them again. And I only know that because these speedrunners broke this game apart into its very core. And they're like, oh, yeah. The hitbox actually opens up like right here. And so I've started just like mashing on them the very first moment that you can.
Oh, God. The speedrunning community is a special community that is I am not a part of at all. I watch like Games Done Quick whenever they do their fundraisers, but that's about the extent of it. But all right, man. let's talk about your number four, and then we'll get into your number three in a second.
My number four is the Hammer Brothers song. So as the name states, this is the song that plays whenever you get into a fight with the Hammer Brothers on the world map. They usually pop up, one or two of them, sometimes three. They chill there. They're there to interrupt your progress through the game. But if you are able to best them in battle, whether it's the Hammer Brothers or the Boomerang Brothers, they usually reward you with some kind of item. Occasionally it is a star, but sometimes it can be something a little more satisfying, like the hammer or the hint, hint, nudge, nudge, the music box. So this is the song that they also use during the duels between you and the second player, if you are playing in two-player mode. And nothing makes you feel more like battling than this song. From the starting bit of it, where it's, you know, that do, 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 that's just the start of all hell breaking loose at this point. It goes through the loops, and it's just an incredibly catchy song. I find it very fun to just kind of like hum along as you're, you know, whether you're playing the game or not. It's just like a fun song to kind of have in the back of your mind. I'm pretty sure that the beginning part of that song, that part I just mentioned, is used in another game, but I can't think of what. It's like on the tip of my tongue, and I've been thinking about it for like the last week because I got my notes in pretty early this time. I can't think for the life of me where this might have been from. And maybe I'm thinking of a later game, but it's, yeah, it just sounds very familiar to me, and I'm not really sure why.
Like another Mario game or another game altogether?
So that's what I was trying to figure out. I was like, I don't know. I just know that it sounds familiar. And maybe I'm just thinking of the fact that it is used between the two-player battle mode versus playing it in the game. It sounded familiar, but honestly, I've been trying to rack my brain and think of where it could come from, and I can't. So maybe I'm just making it up. It's
you very might possible. Be. You might be, because like I only know that this track from this, I want to say, unless it showed up in like a, what was the Super Mario Brothers on the Wii? I owned it. It might have been
used. Super Mario Brothers Wii?
Yes. That amazing name that just escaped my memory. Excellent. Good job, Cody. That game is structured so similarly to this. It could have been there. Wait, you said that you weren't really a big Mario guy. So did you even play like the one on Wii?
No.
Okay, then you were no help there at all. Thanks. So someone let us know if that's what we're thinking of or not, because we're both idiots. I have here is because I read your notes, obviously. I was like, what about this makes you want to fight? Like, this doesn't make me want to throw down with somebody at all. But then I realized you were talking in game, which is completely different. And I completely get this almost made my list. I do enjoy this track. To me, there's just a fun classic Mario track, but there wasn't enough that really made it stand out to me for me to put it on my list.
Yeah, no, this was not something that I, you know, someone steals my parking lot or parking space in the parking lot and I want to get out of my car and I'm da-na-na.
That's literally what I thought you were referencing. And I was like, Peter got to beat a bitch to this? Like, come on. No.
Nothing like that. Just in the game. It feels, and maybe it is because of the way it's poised as that two-player battle mode where you're trying to fight to either take the player's turn or steal their little cards that they get at the end of the stage, both of which I am known for doing. That's what I meant by fighting, not fighting IRL.
Okay, I was expecting IRL, and I was like, I see a video that I want to make. All right, buddy, tell me about number three, since we already know mine.
Yeah, your number three, just to recap, was the underground theme as well. So my number three ended up being the World Map 7, which is called Pipe Maze Theme. This particular track was quite interesting to me. I really adore the jazzy nod that this song brings. It doesn't fit really at all with the theme of the world itself, minus the fact that the little plants on it are all kind of swaying in like a little jazzy fashion, I guess, which is to say that there's something that moves in the world map on each world, which is always, it was always a little charming to me. All of the world map tracks being different adds so much personality to this game, but this song in particular is just my favorite. It almost gives me like a strange detective slash PI vibe to it. It's almost like you just walked into the office of an investigator to solve the world's biggest mystery. The world itself, I don't care too much about, but there is a lot of underground themes that you get because of all the pipe traveling. And I feel like that may lean into why I enjoyed this world so much, since I do enjoy that track quite a bit. It's never, going through those tunnels is never enough to truly appreciate the underground theme. So you have to play a stage that actually requires you to be there longer than 3 seconds. There isn't too much to stand out for the world itself, but you do fight my favorite Koopa Kid, which is Ludwig. I think that's before they got their names. I think they got named in Super Mario World, but before that, they were just known as the Koopa Kids.
This track once again almost made my list. It's interesting that you put like the investigator side of things, like walking into his office, because I put down that I love the mystery and the intrigue that the song delivers. My one thing about it though is that I don't remember this at all. I either never got to this stage, even though I got to the last world, but I could have used a warp whistle or something to get there. What was this stage? Was this Little Big World?
No, Little Big World was 4. So that was what I was kind of noting at, was like, yeah, there's nothing particularly unique about this world. There was a lot of pipe traveling. I remember there being like a lot of places where you can go down into a part of the stage and then you'd have to come back up at a different part in order to progress through it. I think that was the novelty of the stage. So nothing kind of crazy or anything like that. It was just more maze-like than the rest of the Super Mario Brothers 3 game.
It didn't happen to be a bunch of islands, did it?
Yes. The world map itself?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it was.
All right. Now, never mind. I know this level. Okay, cool.
It was a dark green hue and had like these little green plants on it that were bopping and weaving to the song. Anytime you wanted to travel to the different areas or getting to where you wanted to go, you had to travel via pipes, not just in the stages, but on the world map itself.
Yeah. Okay. Now it's making sense of the name of the track and everything else checks out. But I, for the life of me, if we hadn't like discussed this, I never would have thought of that world probably again.
Okay. Why don't you tell me your number two?
My number two is Music Box or Music Box Theme. I'll go ahead and say it. I have no idea what the hell the music box does. I don't remember at all. I remember it being a rare item, but I don't remember what it was used for. This is the only time the traditional Mario Brothers theme is heard on this soundtrack. This is just a twist on that iconic theme. It's slowed down, not quite to a jazz level because the notes are kind of lighter, but it definitely has some swing to it that I really like. I know it's about as basic as they come, but who doesn't love the traditional Mario theme?
Just to answer your question, the music box is actually used to put the Hammer Brothers on the map to sleep. I think it does it for 3 turns, But yeah, they go to sleep and then you don't encounter them. You can just kind of skip right over them if you want to. So it works like the cloud does for the stages, but just works on the Hammer Brothers themselves.
All right, cool. That answers that. I remember, like, I know the icon of what it looked like, and I knew the music. I just couldn't remember what the hell it did.
Right. This song is really charming. I thought about putting this on my list purely for the nostalgia, but I couldn't just because the Super Mario Brothers 3 soundtrack has so many better songs. And not saying that this is bad by any stretch, but I always find the recycled songs from old games, whether that's Nintendo using it for Mario or Zelda or anything like that, they're charming and they're a nice little novelty, but they're not really these hard hitters like some of the original tracks tend to be. I always appreciate Nintendo doing that stuff. It's always welcome. So please, Nintendo, don't ever stop doing it. But yeah, the original songs to me always seem to be a little better just for the simple fact that they are able to kind of go outside of the box.
And I would agree with that until we get to some of the more modern games. Like, God, I can't wait to cover Odyssey when we get there one day, because that is an amazing soundtrack all to itself that does reinvent many themes from all over Mario's history. And so I think there are like different jumping off points where you can do a reset. This isn't one of them. I'm not saying it is. Obviously, this is just a follow up to Super Mario Brothers, the original, and we all forget about two. So I do think that there are places where it does kind of redefine itself pretty well. But no, I get what you're saying. The only reason why it's here and it's this high is I thought it was weird that this is the only track that has it for a mainstay Mario game. I expected to hear it at least once or twice more, and I was shocked that we didn't.
Yeah, man, don't get me started on Super Mario Odyssey, because I will go on for days about that big band remix. Oh, yeah. Original theme. It's just so good.
Save it. We got an episode to do later.
You're right.
All right, man. What's number two?
My number two is the athletic theme, which is also known as the second overworld theme. Super Mario Brothers, at least the older games, tended to have two overworld tracks that they had. So there was always the original one, and then they would have like an athletic theme. And I believe that started in Super Mario Brothers 3. I tend to always enjoy the athletic themes in Mario games more than the original one. This song, along with many others, is really fun. It's kind of spunky and has a great pacing for just running full dash through the stage, having your little power meter fully charged, and prepping you for flying if you have the Leaf or Tanuki suit. It breeds kind of the whole speedrunning aspect of it. It's intended to make you feel like, hey, let's just fly through the stage as quickly as possible. It also reminds me of the stage where the giant fish is trying its very best to eat the crap out of you. Because no matter how much I play this damn game, I always get eaten by that fish at least once. Every single time it eats me.
This is the only track of yours that I was confused about, to be honest, because I don't like either of these overworld tracks at all, which I know is weird, but honestly, it's the drums in both of them. the drums in both of these tracks are just so distracting to me that it's all I can hear, which is something that when I played the game, I never noticed because I'm busy playing Mario, obviously. But when I was listening to this on my phone, I was outside and I had it on my phone and I was like, why are these drums as tangy as kind of they are? Why? It doesn't make sense. So it was in one of my other ones. I think it's the Underground. Let me double check my notes here. Yeah, where I noticed a crappy use of drums. This is what I was referring to. I appreciate the track because it is like playing the game. I do love it when you're playing the game, but standing on its own, oh man, it was a grind to get through these.
I'll have to re-listen because I know in the first Overworld track, they use kind of like a, it almost sounds like a steel drum a little bit for that track. And I agree. I'm not a huge fan. I don't think it's bad per se. I just don't really like it that much, but it does add a little character to all the colors and the vibrancy that this game brings. But I don't actually remember hearing very dominant drum tracks in, or any kind of percussion really, in the Athletic theme. So I'll have to go back and listen and hear if I hear what you're referring to, because it doesn't ring a bell to me.
Okay. It's there. It's less prevalent because in the first one, it's dominant, like so dominant. And again, I was raised playing drums. So it's naturally something I have more of an ear for that you probably don't. So that might be why it stands out as much as it does to me. I'm sure that people are going to listen to this and be like, Cody, you're stupid and crazy, which I know, but that's a different story completely. We all know this, but that might be why it sticks out more to me than it might to you. Also, I didn't know that at all. I didn't know about like having an Athletic theme versus a non or anything like that. I didn't know that was a thing that they did.
Yeah, you have to check it out. I don't recall one being in Super Mario Brothers 1. I'm pretty sure it was the same Overworld theme for every stage that wasn't Underground. 2 may have had it, but again, we're kind of just writing that one off. But I know for a fact that 3, Super Mario World 2, and maybe a few others do have what's considered an Overworld and then an Athletic theme. Sometimes they're called a little something different, but I'm pretty sure that sticks.
Yeah, and I can kind of, I'm jumping ahead to Super Mario World, and I can kind of get what you're describing and how they do that with some of their earlier tracks as well. So, I don't know. I guess I just never really paid attention to it. All right, buddy.
Great, sir. Yeah. We might as well just talk at the same time the whole rest of this episode, because once again, we've lined up on our number one, but this track, I feel like everybody's probably got this marked as their number one, just because, I mean, it really is an iconic track, just something that everybody can recognize within the first couple of notes. But I'm going to go ahead and let you open it up and tell everybody what our number one is.
It is the airship theme. When I opened up the dock and saw that your number one was the same as mine, I was like, thank God, because I was going to be upset if it was any lower. This track defines this game to me. When I think of the music from this game, it is this track, which is kind of odd. I think it's because this is the only Mario game where airships are utilized so heavily. There isn't any rain or any hints of thunder on this track, but it's so ominous that you can just kind of tell that it's raining. Like, how could you not? These levels, like this track, are so unique that this is easily my number one.
Thank you. I don't know if you remember, but there is actually thunder. I don't think it's part of. Yeah, I don't think it's part of the track. It's more of the sound effect line that has it. But there is thunder and flashing lights.
No, I do remember that. I was saying because it is what I was trying to convey was that, yes, it is raining on the screen when you're playing the game. And you do get that audio cue, but it's not on the soundtrack. So I don't include it. That's kind of
right. Makes sense. My response to this is like, this might be the most basic answer, but I don't even care. It's just like one of those things where this track, there's not words for it about how iconic it is. It brings so much to the table with its composition, and delivery that there's nothing that I find in the Mario themes more stressful than knowing you're on the final stage of a world only to be lifted off into an airship with this theme playing in the background. It's like add insult to injury for Mario. You don't even get to fight this in the worlds that you assumingly grow up in, but you get lifted off into the ship where the only thing below you is a surefire death. Mm-hmm. I wish I could say this is the only thing that carried it, but it works harmoniously with the thunder in the background, the flashing screens to signify that there's lightning, and all the bullet sounds coming from the cannons and the bullet bills that are firing off. These stages can end up fairly chaotic, especially with some of it almost feels like a bullet hell in some stages. And the music just makes sure that you know of it. Also, what is more crazy to you than having a world where if you die in the stage, the airship moves? And this might seem like it's not a big deal, but in some worlds, you don't have to play all the stages. You can beat a select few to get to the end. And if the airship flies to a spot where you have to beat that stage now, it adds so much more to how devious Bowser is.
I'm going to build on that a little bit. We know the target demographic for our audience is basically people our age. But for those who haven't experienced this game, what Peter's talking about is the way this game is like World Map 7. These are world maps that you're moving Mario around and then you're playing levels inside of this. The airship is a little icon that moves around that map because obviously the airship, it moves. It's an auto-scrolling level, which just adds to the hell that were these things. But it was always tedious to get back to wherever the airship had moved whenever you died. You're absolutely right.
I forgot to mention that it was an auto scroller. I think that's something that everybody should know because nobody likes auto scrolling levels.
No, and especially like you brought it up, this is bullet hell. So you combine an auto scroller with a bullet hell level with pillars of fire and platforming, you have some really challenging levels if you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, don't forget the little bastards that come out of the ground and throw the little wrench things at you.
Peter, I was having a good night because I had forgotten about those little shits until just now.
Something that's very interesting, talking about the age of this game and not really understanding or knowing the console, or maybe they did and they did it intentionally, I don't know, but something about those little wrenches and the bullet bills and things like that that fly on the stage is that when this stage moves up and down, the bullets move in a weird way too. I don't know if it's an optical illusion or not, but it feels like either they are traveling on a straight line and it's really botchy because the ship is moving, the camera is moving up and down, or they're moving in a way too. But you can be in an area where normally the bullet bill would have flown over your head had you just stood still. But as the camera pans, it pushes the bullet bill into you. And I cannot tell you how many times I've died not knowing where that was going to happen.
Yeah, because you'll stand somewhere and survey the situation. You might be at the top of the screen and, you know, it's slowly moving down. You see a bullet going and you're like, all right, I'm safe. You're still keeping your eye out. Then all of a sudden, and you're dead. And that was so annoying. No, I don't think it was an illusion. I think that was like a real thing, but I haven't played the game in more than a decade, I know.
I have an interesting video capture that I took when this was put on the Nintendo Switch Online, where I was running, and it was one of those miracle jumps that you can't believe that you got through where you did without dying. But I have a video of it where it was just like, it had to have been pixels between life and death. And I was able to eke my way through because of that. The camera was panning. There was bullets flying everywhere and cannonballs all around me. And I just so happened to jump at the right moment that I could squeeze through just for a mushroom that I was chasing.
The ever elusive mushroom. Man, when you are small on this level in particular, but just small in a Mario game, a mushroom is everything. I've gone down literal holes and fallen just trying to get a mushroom in time. So yeah, I completely get it and I respect it.
You want to talk about vulnerability in games? Try playing a Super Mario Brother game without a mushroom. It's the scariest time of your life because everything is death to you.
Oh yeah. Thank God they introduced the inventory system in this, right?
Yes, absolutely. All right, sir. Well, we've made it through yet another game. Check Super Mario Brothers 3 off the list, which is this the first Mario we've covered? I think so.
It is.
Yeah. So many more of those to come, I assure you, because Mario has some of the better soundtracks, I think, that we've heard. Fairly certain that you and I have played almost all, if not all of them. Even though it's not really my thing, I've still played most of them, I think. Same for you, right?
Yeah, I've played most of them except the handhelds, which, I mean, as you're noting in this, like a lot of the handhelds were just remakes anyway, or, you know, copy paste and it's on a new console. So I haven't played all of them. But if it was on a console, yes, I played it.
Gotcha. Yeah, the only exception to that remake thing you were talking about is the Super Mario Land games, which I won't touch Super Mario Land 1 with a 10-foot pole ever again. Nope. Because it was atrocious. Super Mario Land 2, though, was actually pretty charming. If you've never gotten a chance to play that, I would encourage you to give that a try somehow, because it was a good one and led us up to Super Mario Land 3, which featured Wario, I believe.
If it wasn't Super Mario Brothers or World when I was a kid, I didn't want to play it. That was kind of like Donkey Kong Land, which I think was one of them, where it just felt like a cheap port when I wanted to be playing the other game. So I just never gave them the time of day, I'll be honest.
Land 1, I would agree 100%. It does feel like a cheap port, and I'll have to look it up and see who developed that, because I feel like there were so many bizarre mechanics to that game that I cannot believe in any world that was created by the original team. Super Mario Land 2, albeit being very punishing in its design, felt a lot more like a Super Mario Brothers game.
Okay, well, that's what I would want out of the experience. I'll have to see if I can track one of those down or do an emulator or something.
Yeah, definitely. Any final thoughts on Super Mario Brothers 3?
Yeah, I do kind of, but I don't really know how to bring it up. You and I were talking before we started recording about the Super Mario cartridge. Hold on, I got to reach and get it now.
Yeah, that's right. This was super bizarre.
Okay, so I was looking for this cart, because honestly, I didn't remember if I owned it or not. You know, later in life, I did acquire it. So I had it in my hands and I was waiting on Peter's call, and I turn it over, and it, on the back, it says, caution, do not store in extreme temperatures. Do not immerse in water. Do not clean with benzene, thinner alcohol, or other such solvents, which I'll go ahead and say I've done that. So whoops. But then it says copyright Nintendo 1985, and this game didn't come out until 89. So we were having a discussion about this because I was like, that's odd. That's weird. So I go back in my closet and I grab another game and then another game and then another game. And they all say the copyright 1985. But then I was talking to you about this and you said that you had pulled out a couple of games and had something a little bit different go on.
Right. It was almost like they put on the back the copyright of when the Nintendo Entertainment System came out. But on the front of Faxanadu, it actually has the copyright for the game itself, which says trademark and copyright 1988 Hudson Soft under license from Falcom. And I think we went over a few of the games we had in our hands, and that was the only one that actually had that present. The rest of them did not.
Correct. Yeah. The other three, or the other four that I have over here, do not. And I mean, there's more in the closet. I have a ton of these things, but I just grabbed some that were readily available. Yeah, we were just like, why do not all of them have that? Because you thought it was a slam dunk up and down that they did. And then I told you, well, Mario Brothers doesn't.
Yeah, thinking about today's games, if you look in the back of any game box, you see the copyrights of both the developer and the publisher. You don't actually see anything spoken. So if a game is developed by a third-party company, you don't see Nintendo's name for anything except for the licensing. It'll say licensed by Nintendo, which is something that they did a long time ago, back when piracy was a big deal and you could make fake copies of NES games and things like that. You know, you always wanted to look for ones that were officially licensed by Nintendo with their little seal of approval or what have you. But I was very confused at the fact that they would say copyright of Nintendo 1985 on all of their things when the year the console came out never really mattered. It just seemed like a very weird design decision to have on the back of your carts, but who knows?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if Super Nintendo did the same thing. I have games in the closet I could go check, and I might after we get done talking. I don't know if they did the same thing, but like, this is something that I never would have thought of if it wasn't for us doing this and talking about this. I can't tell you the last time I put my hands on this cart. Hell, I forgot that I had it. So yeah, that was an interesting little thing that we did literally as soon as we started talking to each other today.
Yeah, one other thing I wanted to note too is whenever you had said that the back of the cart says not to clean with alcohol, and I'm pretty sure we all did because we were dumb and didn't realize that the dirtiness of our contacts on the cart itself were not the issue. It was the fact that the contacts inside of the console were getting kind of pushed down, so the connection wasn't being made as well. That is one of the things that they tell you all the time. Don't clean your cartridges with alcohol or anything like that because it's not good for it. But, you know, they tell you also not to blow in your carts. And I can't tell you how much air I've wasted blowing into my cart thinking it made any difference whatsoever.
That works, damn it. Don't you take that away from me. That is a bona fide way that works.
I know. I'm ruining everybody's childhood to let them know that that's not it.
Well, I think we knew that, but we just didn't care, right? Wasn't that part of it?
I didn't. As a kid, I was like, man, this works every time. You know, I'm surprised I don't blow on more things to get them to work. Like, oh, look at this. My cell phone decided to stop working. Let me just blow on that and see if it helps.
I do that with the connector, with the charger. I still do. And you know what? Because my phone is older. It's a Galaxy S8. I did that once because I have like the OtterBox case on it, and I blew in there to clean it out, put the little rubber thing back on, and then all of a sudden it was like, hey, you need to open that up because there's humidity in there. And I was like, oh, well, shit.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly right. Putting all that moisture in your electronics, and electronics and moisture do not mix.
No, they don't. No, they don't at all.
All right. Well, I didn't have any more wrap up as far as Super Mario Brothers 3 goes, but I did have a question for this episode that I wanted to put there for you and anybody else who feels like answering. And as always, if you are going to answer the question, just reach out to us on Twitter at Deep Base Podcast. You can pretty much find us on, if you're looking for us online, that's pretty much our handle everywhere. But my question this week is going to be, what was your favorite suit in Super Mario Brothers 3?
I'm cheating because it's not a suit. It's a boot.
Okay. Oh, I don't blame you. The boot is so adorable.
Das Boot. I love that thing. Just getting in it, you just see the top of Mario's head and you can walk on the little stupid clam things that annoy the living crap out of me. Give that thing to me all day long. He was absolutely adorable in it.
He really was. And it's funny you mentioned his head's poking out because it's also his big ass nose sticking over top of it.
But not the mustache, it's just the nose pretty much. You know, that's where the line is.
Yeah, no, I do love the boot. I didn't think about that. You got a little creative on me.
Thank you.
My favorite suit was the frog suit. No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to pause there for a minute and let everybody die on the inside for just
What's
a second.
What's wrong with the frog suit?
The frog suit is terrible. No, God, no. You know what? I'm now hosting open casting calls for the co-host of Deep Base Podcast because Cody likes the frog suit. God damn it, Cody.
Well, hold on. I was going to tell you this after the show because I learned this week. God, we haven't talked in a minute. I learned this week that you had never beaten Super Mario 64, and I almost tweeted out my resignation. So,
oh, good. It's mutual.
It's mutual. Fuck off.
The frog suit has its usefulness, and it took me many years to actually figure it out that it is meant for water levels. It makes water levels 100% easier to navigate through. Because you get full control over Mario as opposed to like that weird drag that they give. But my favorite suit is actually the Hammer Brothers suit. I really enjoyed that one. For one, Mario looks badass in it. He, you know, dons this helmet and armor, but it gives what would be his original fireball attack kind of a different way of approaching things. It's got, he throws his hammers just like the Hammer Brothers do. So they kind of go in an arc. And it takes a little getting used to really understand how it works. But I feel like there was something else that it did pretty well. And I can't remember what it was. I don't remember if it was like it couldn't slide or it did slide really well or something like that. But there was some other little perk that came with it, kind of like how the Tanuki has the statue. Yeah, I just enjoyed the Hammer Brothers suit. I thought he looked really good in it. And it was by far at the time one of the most unique suits to have.
Yeah, it was something you brought up, the difference in the projectiles between the fireball and the hammer. And correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the big differences that you had to get used to was that the fireball actually bounced along, where the hammer just went straight down and off the stage. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it's correct. Yeah.
Okay, so that was like a different mechanic to it that I remember, because on the one hand, if you're on like an airship level or something, and you are high up, you can throw that thing and it might hit a guy or maybe even two on its way down and you'd be good. When you have the fireball, which I'm using because it's so iconic and it's also a projectile, you can just be running and spam that button and just shoot things that are in front of you and you'll be pretty good to go. So it definitely controlled a bit differently. Honestly, I had forgotten that you could be or use that suit until you brought it up just now.
Yeah, I don't recall what world it is. I know world 3 is where you get all your frog suits and maybe another world, but I forget if world 4 or 5 are the ones that have the Hammer Brothers suits. Whichever one it is, you usually could get, I think, 2 in the world, and I would just stockpile them because they were so great.
Yeah, and those were, again, something that went into your inventory, right? You wouldn't get those out of like a question mark box, would you?
No, you know, they were all from the mushroom houses.
Okay, that checks out and makes sense. So awesome. I can't take anything away from that pick. Yeah.
All right, sir. Well, that does it for us here on episode 8 covering Super Mario Brothers 3. Thank you to everybody who's been listening and supporting the podcast. We really appreciate you all the time. Thank you, Cody, for sitting alongside of me, even though this will be your last and final episode.
Fuck off.
We really appreciate it, guys. Our next episode is going to be a good one. If I remember correctly, yes. Oh, our next episode is actually going to be covering a different system.
Yes, an exclusive for a system that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah. I'm trying to get better at that. I've been doing my best to try and like divvy this up and kind of go all over the place, but it's definitely evident that we are kind of Nintendo guys with like a side of PlayStation. Yeah, so I am trying to divvy it up. I'm trying to make it all over the place and stuff, because it's not like I haven't played this particular console. I have, but it's like everything I've played on it is usually cross-platform anyway, so hard to really pick any exclusives up. This one is an exclusive, and it's going to be, I think, a lot of fun. It's going to be different, actually, than what we've covered in the past. This is by far more orchestral, I think, so I'm looking forward to it.
I actually just started playing it again today when I wrapped up my notes and everything. This is going to be a fun one for sure. I'll tell you offline something that I thought about it.
Sure, absolutely. All right, guys, that's going to be it for us. We will catch you in 2 weeks for the next episode, and we'll see you guys all then. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Hey everyone, Peter here. Just wanted to drop in with a small shout out to two of my friends who are also doing what they love, and I wanted to share their projects with you. First is Intrepid, who is a variety caster on Twitch and is brand new to the live broadcasting space. If you love the content you find on the Deep Base podcast, you'll love hanging out with him. He's been playing No Man's Sky and NBA 2K21 and would love to have you play with him. You can find him over at twitch.tv/intrepid_1914, where the E in the Intrepid is a 3. Second, if you're a fan of mobile games, then A, you're in good company because so am I, and B, you'll want to check out Echo over on YouTube. He's got over 240,000 people subscribed to his channel, and he makes excellent, well-produced content. I'd give you his URL, but for some reason, he hasn't set a vanity link. Way to be professional, Echo. Head on over to YouTube and search Echo Gaming and you'll find him easy enough. He'll be the dashing man with the big muscles. These two fellas are two of my good friends IRL, and it would mean a lot to me if you checked them out too. As always, thanks for all of the love and support here at the Deep Base Podcast, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.